join the party. But when you actually look at the people who join, a really good number, significant number of middle class college students were joining the party, as were Huey and Bobby when they started the party. You had people who actually owned their own businesses, people who had really stable jobs like at the post office, or people who had left the military and worked at some huge corporate firm. So you had a hodgepodge of individuals from the poor and dispossessed to people who were very well off who joined the Black Panther Party. And it would be really hard to say that it was just this or just that, because you're going to have a different group that joined in New Orleans, because a lot of poor people do join New Orleans because they organize in the Desire Housing Project. You know, that's a place where poor people congregate. But when you look at Boston, when you look at New York, when you look at Winston-Salem, North Carolina, these people are in college. They're running their own businesses. Their parents are very well off, and they simply want to see something different. So I would not lump the membership in, of the Black Panther Party into this underclass that some historians and other scholars have tried to do.
How was the research part of this, Dr. Austin? I mean, you're obviously speaking to a lot of people, some people who haven't spoken to before. They're being fairly candid about their experiences in the Black Panther Party. You coming in as a researcher, as an academic, as an African-American man doing this research, trials and tribulations of getting this information and eventually getting out this almost 400, 500 pages worth of text.
Well, it was very difficult but fun. If I could just tell you a little story about how it all started off. I told you about being in this class. It was U.S. history since 1945. And about a week before that, I'd been in a dorm room on campus watching BET. And they broke in with this picture of a guy with a shotgun and a bandolier. And of course, you know, I'm 19 and I'm into shotguns and bandoliers if I could get my hand on one.
Okay.
But I didn't really know what was going on or what it was about. So I'm in this class and my teacher starts talking about this guy and I raise my hand and ask questions. So I'm making that connection between what I saw in my dorm room and what's happening in class. And he answers it, and I ask another question and he answers it. And I ask another one and he says, "Hey, let me finish my lecture and we can talk later." But I couldn't let it go, and he finally said, "Well, why don't you just do your term paper on it?" Well, I went to the library to start on my term paper, and apparently the University of Southern Mississippi, where I was an undergrad at the time, had a rash of thefts in the library, and the thieves took mostly the African-American titles. So there was literally nothing for me to work on. I then introduced myself to the director of interlibrary loan, who could get me a few things, but not really what I wanted. So I had to start traveling to finish this term paper, which led me to California. And I'm really now getting to the part of the question that you actually want answered.
Take your time.
And I got there, and I didn't know anybody. A friend of mine introduced me to somebody who knew a Panther, and it turned out to be Emory Douglas, the Minister of Culture for the Black Panther Party. And Emory was very nice. He invited me to his office and talked to me and gave me a preliminary interview. And I thought it was great until I went back and started reading the newspapers and other books and stuff. And he hadn't really told me anything that, you know, was hard-hitting. So I went back to California and interviewed him again, and the same thing. It was 6 years, Mr. Turner, before Mr. Douglas told me something that I hadn't read in a book or a newspaper.
Okay.
So we're talking a lot of begging, a lot of digging, and a lot of just developing trust with people who are obviously wary of strangers because of the way they were infiltrated so badly. So that once they decided that I was okay, Emory introduced me to another person, Billy X up in Sacramento, who was Huey Newton's bodyguard at one point. And they started introducing me to other people. And so that kind of spread back to New York, down to New Orleans, and all over to these other places. But many of them were and are still wary of who and what I am because of the kinds of questions that I'm asking. You know, you mentioned the title, you know, it's violence in the making and unmaking of the party. It could be very misleading, but I'm really trying to find out, and this is what I'm telling them, what made this party tick, because like many members, I thought all you had to do was go pick up a gun, you can be in the party. But that obviously is not the case, especially if you read the book, you find that that is far from the case. So these individuals have to create an air of trust, and they take a lot of time to do this, because you can't just go to a police report and find out what happened. In fact, most of the police precincts that I visited during my research, oh, we lost those files. They burned in a fire. We don't know what you're talking about. I've never heard of that person, that kind of thing.
Okay.
The Stanford archive, where the Huey P. Newton Foundation papers are now, didn't exist at the time, so I couldn't go there. Columbia University in New York had a very good collection, but they were inaccessible. They weren't open to the public for people doing research on the party. And so I'm literally running people down around the country, and I guess they got tired of me bugging them. And, you know, 8-10 years later, they decided that they would indeed talk to me. So I'm quite proud that I do have acquaintances and friends in the Black Panther Party.
Yeah, it's interesting, Dr. Austin, because some of the recent cases still have legacy connections to what happened in the period that you write about, the case of Freddie Hilton in Atlanta, the case of the San Francisco 8. It seems as if some of the activities that you talk about, the way in which the government responded in violence to the Black Panther Party, hasn't gone away.
It most certainly hasn't gone away. I know that story with Freddie Hilton, or Kamal Siddiqui, I think.
Correct.
Would be his African name, where the federal government offered him money to basically frame his baby's mama, you know, Assata Shakur. And he refused to do it. And within a week, they sentenced him to life in prison. We can see the same thing with A$AP Brown or Jamil El-Amin. Same thing happens with him. The officer, well, there were two officers shot. One was killed in Atlanta, and they say that Jamil El-Amin did it. Well, the officer that didn't die testified on the stand that the person who shot them was short, stocky, and had green eyes. And if anybody's ever seen Jamil El-Amin or A$AP Brown, he's tall, skinny, and has brown eyes. So they still convicted him because of this legacy, because of this vendetta that they never got an opportunity to get him back in the day. And certainly with the San Francisco 8, where none of the evidence, the fingerprints, the DNA evidence that they claim they had match any of the people that they have incarcerated. So we're talking the same people going after the same people for the same reason. And that is, they simply don't like them. They have the money, they have the resources, and they can do it.
We're listening to the voice of Dr. Kirst Austin, who's an associate professor in the University of Southern Mississippi. You're listening there to the voice, as I'm saying, of Dr. Curtis Austin, who's an associate professor at the University of Southern Mississippi. And he's talking about his book, Up Against the Wall, Violence in the Making and Unmaking of the Black Panther Party. That book is available this evening for a $100 pledge. We certainly are open to any and all contributions here at radio station KPFA. The phone number is 510-848-5732. 510-848-5732. 1-800-439-5732. This is a monumental book. I've read it over the last couple of weeks. It's about close to about 500 pages long. It has a chapter on the civil wrongs and the rise of the Black Panther Party, as Dr. Austin was talking about, the growth of the Black Panther Party for self-defense, speaking of violence, publicizing the party, the growth and the transformation, unjustifiable homicide. Very, very interesting chapter. It's about the assassinations and the murders of Black Panther Party members, spending a lot of time talking about Fred Hampton, the case where Fred Hampton's door was kicked down in December of 1969 at some ungodly hour in the morning, and he, along with Mark Clark, were murdered by the Chicago police. It has a background to the case of Prentice Bunchy Carter and John Huggins at UCLA. It has FBI transcript. As Dr. Curtis Austin has mentioned, the CIA was part of the movement there to break down the door of Fred Hampton and murder him in his sleep in 1969. Southern Discomfort, a chapter which talks about the Black Panther Party in the South. to the East and Back and the Riff. It talks about the period of the 1968-1969 when COINTELPRO was alive and well and aggressive. 510-848-5732. That is a $100 pledge for Up Against the Wall, Violence in the Making and Unmaking of the Black Panther Party. We have a limited number of copies. They've been donated by the University of Arkansas. Dr. Curtis Austin, as you heard there, is the head of the Department of Oral History at the University of Southern Mississippi. He also is heading up a new Black Studies program there. You can hear him talking. I know at times people say, well, that's the Black Panther Party. That was 1968. That was 1966. That was 1972. That was COINTELPRO then. What Dr. Austin is saying, be very, very clear. He's saying the COINTELPRO is alive and well in the contemporary period. He mentioned the case of Kamal Siddiqui, who was, after he refused to participate in the framing and the bringing back to the United States of Assad Shakur, was given a life sentence. He is currently in jail in Atlanta. He talked about the case of Jamil El-Amin. These are issues that get coverage on KPFA, on Pacifica radio stations, but we don't get enough coverage. And one of the things, that's why it's called listener-sponsored, is because you, the listener, make a choice about the ability for us to be able to be on the air. And we are covering stories that don't want to be covered. The case of Leonard Peltier, Sekou Sundanyata, Marilyn Buck, the Cuban Five, Chip Fitzgerald, Oscar Lopez Rivera, Eddie Hatcher, Rochelle McGee, Mutulu Shakur, Hugo Pinnell, and so many other people who are incarcerated as a result of COINTELPRO activity. These are people who have done 25, 30 years. The case of the San Francisco Eight, which he spoke about, these eight gentlemen in San Francisco, including Herman Bell, including Ray Bourdeau, Richard Brown, Richard O'Neill, Hank Jones, Jaleel Mutakin, Harold Taylor, Francisco Torres. All of these are eight men who are currently facing murder charges currently in San Francisco. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. The book, Up Against the Wall, Violence in the Making and Unmaking of the Black Panther Party. Dr. Curtis Austin is not just a book scholar. He's been involved in talking to some of the members of the San Francisco Eight. He's been active in movements around issues of African, as he talks about later in the interview, around Black liberation. He is an active participant. The book, Violence in the Making and the Unmaking of the Black Panther Party, Up Against the Wall, is available for a $100 pledge. We have a limited number of copies. This book is recently out. Dr. Curtis Austin will be out here in the Bay Area in the next couple of months, and we hope to have him live in the studio. I would direct your attention to some of the chapters in here. I'm going to get back to some of the interview because I want you to hear more about why you should pledge for getting a copy of Up Against the Wall, Violence in the Making and the Unmaking of the Black Panther Party. We come to you here at KPFA on Africa Today 3 or 4 times a year, and we ask you to reach and to support the station, to support not only Africa Today, but to support all the people who make Africa Today possible, the people in the phone room, the people who answer the front door, the people, the engineers, the food donors, the Three Stone Hearth, Las Cascadas, Rainbow, Tion's, Numi, Whole Food, Peaberry, La Mediterranean, the volunteers, the people who answer the phone. This is what makes it go. It doesn't have anything to do with the individual behind the mic. It's a consciousness, it's a energy, it's a source of information. That's what KPFA is. The phone number here, 510-848-5732. As I was reading the chapter on in the book which talked about violence, I'm looking for it now, unjustifiable homicide, a number of cartoons that the FBI was sending in its COINTELPRO program between the Chicago Black Panther parties and between the Blackstone Rangers or the Peacestone Rangers, extensive background on the whole issue of what happened in Los Angeles with the murder of Alprentice Bunchy Carter and John Huggins, extensive section on internationalism and the Black Panther Party, comments from people such as Billy X, comments from people such as Emory Douglas, a whole lengthy discussion on the events of the late 1960s, the murder of Alex Rackley, the murder of Sam Napier. 510-848-5732. For a $100 pledge, you can get a copy of Up Against the Wall, Violence in the Making and Unmaking of the Black Panther Party. I encourage you to give that a look and a listen. Let's go back to the interview in just a moment.
Oh, what a lovely, precious dream.
Something that Huey Newton, Bobby Seale, and the other leaders of the party, Eldridge, Kathleen Cleaver, and so on, knew that not only would it attract people inside the United States, but others throughout the world. And then when you look at where they have support groups in France and Germany and New Zealand and Papua New Guinea and Israel and India, all over the globe, people are saying, what took you guys so long? You know, we've been waiting on black people in the belly of the beast to do something. So now here you are. And so here's some money. Here's some training. Here's some space. Here's pretty much everything that you need to survive.
What did take us so long, Dr. Austin?
You know, I think it was looking at the situation from a domestic point of view. You know, when you look at the history of Africans in America, we didn't just pop up out of the ground, you know. We were literally taken for a ride, you know, taken from the continent, brought to the Caribbean, South and Central America, then to the North American continent. And so those international ties have never been cut. It's just that we've never been taught about those ties. And because we hadn't been taught about them, we assumed they didn't exist. But when you get people who travel, when you get people who read like a Malcolm X, who is willing to share this information despite what the consequences might be, then you get people who begin to wake up. And I think the answer to your question is we were, for the most part, simply asleep. Not that David Walker or Henry Highland Garnett did not see this need for an international move, but for the most part, people simply were not listening.
Okay. And how did, on this question of violence, kind of bridging back to what you were saying, because as you looked out at Cuba, you looked out at Vietnam, or you looked out at Algeria, these were clearly movements that used revolutionary violence or violence, however you want. And how did you work with that theme? Because you said it not only did violence serve as a magnet for disaffected youth, but it also brought a national spotlight on the organization. And you also talk in there about, hey, you know, it brought bad media. African-American communities didn't necessarily always see violent solutions based on a set of social realities as a solution. How did you wrestle with that theme, violence, in looking at the party in this era?
Well, I started with the history of the black fight against oppression. And I noticed that there were not a lot of marches and sit-ins throughout the period of slavery, and certainly Reconstruction and then segregation. And I came to discover that nonviolence was actually an aberration, that for many, many years, people had fought against the Klan, Knight Riders, other vigilantes with violence. They responded in kind. If their house was shot up, then they shot back. So that when we get this nonviolent movement, it's really anathema to black people. I mean, most black people are thinking Martin Luther King must be crazy. You know, I'll support freedom and liberation, but I'm certainly not going to stand around and turn the other cheek, you know. So that what I tried to do was to see what was necessary in every freedom movement. And I looked around the world again, in Cuba and Vietnam and Africa and other places that had achieved their freedom, and of course the one thing I noticed was that none of them were free who didn't use revolutionary violence, who didn't respond in kind to violent oppression. And what I found was that black people had been doing that all along. They simply weren't getting on the news talking about it. It was SNCC and later the Black Panther Party that decided it's time out to stop fooling people and to let them know that we do want our freedom and we do want it by any means necessary. And Malcolm X said that the United States of America was the only country in world history that had the opportunity, the chance to endure a revolution without bloodshed. All it had to do was to enforce its own laws. And when we look at the enforcement of laws, or should I say, the non-enforcement of laws in the United States, we can see why advocates for black liberation turn to this by any means necessary philosophy. Because you couldn't get a judge, you couldn't get a jury to say, yes, you know, here's your justice. So that when the police come, you know you're going to get beat up. You know you're going to get shot. You know nothing's going to happen. So if you are a man, if you want your dignity, then the appropriate response would be to prevent that from happening. And, of course, you can't prevent that from happening by singing or sitting in or waiting in.
Okay. I hear a lot of Malcolm in your voice, Dr. Austin. You're quoting word for word here from Malcolm's speeches and last message and from Message to the Grassroots. I was speaking to Dr. Curtis Austin, associate professor at the University of Southern Mississippi's Department of History. He's the author of Up Against the Wall, Violence and the Making and Unmaking of the Black Panther Party. Your chapter number 6 there, Unjustifiable Homicide, it's really a section of the book that really is, as they say, a page turner. Because it's a story about, certainly about what happened with the COINTELPRO program, specifically in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and then later it reappears near the end of the book when you talk about the rift and the split in the party. Did it surprise you that the COINTELPRO program was so vicious? It seemed almost to be beyond what has come out previously. Of course, most of the COINTELPRO papers have not been released. Your thoughts as you worked on that chapter?
Well, the answer is no, it didn't surprise me. But the people that I talked to, the members of the Black Panther Party who endured this onslaught from the federal government by way of COINTELPRO, were really surprised. I mean, to the person, when I asked these questions, they all tell me, well, we didn't know they were going to respond like that. I mean, we knew there was going to be some response, but we didn't know they were going to come at us like that. I mean, after all, we're children. They're 19, 20, 21 years old. We're students. We're American citizens. We didn't know that the response was going to be so vicious, so blatant, and so deadly. But to talk about this just a little bit,
sure.
I mean, what we see happening historically is people get bought off. It's just not very difficult if you're poor or even middle class to accept a couple $100,000 or a couple $1 million to not do something, to not say something. But when you have people who are led by principle and who have a commitment to the struggle, to themselves and to their people, then there's no amount of money that you can give. And again, I say I'm not surprised because I'm a historian and I've seen what they did to people in slavery. I've seen what they did to people in the Reconstruction period. I mean, in the 1875 election here in Mississippi, some 600 black people were killed in broad daylight at a political barbecue because they wanted to vote. So it didn't surprise me at all that they would do that, you know, less than 100 years later. What is surprising is how blatant it is, how really they didn't try to hide very much of it. And when I say they didn't try to hide very much of it, you can go to any library that has a government document section and download and read everything that they were saying to each other at the time and all the notes that they took afterwards. And they're talking about how to get Fred Hampton, how to neutralize Bunchy Carter, how to get rid of certain individuals. And they're making no bones about it that these people are dangerous. And the only way to solve this problem, and their problem, of course, was that there was going to be equality if they were successful, if the Black Panther Party was successful, is to eliminate them. And I think people know that probably one of the best examples of that, and there are many, is Fred Hampton in Chicago. Here is an individual who is very charismatic, whose oratorical skills are at their height, who is able to organize in communities where previously gangs and gang violence had been the order of the day. And so he's explained to people that this is counterproductive to what it is we're looking for, what it is we're trying to do. Why don't you come join us? these so-called gang members, the disciples, the vice lords, in some cases members of the Blackstone Rangers, begin to join the Black Panther Party because they see a need in their community. And once this begins to happen, I mean, there's a whole lot of levels we have to peel back to understand what was going on. It begins to affect the economics of the people who control the Black community, because we don't import cocaine and other illicit drugs into our own communities. We don't have the airplanes, we don't have the boats, we don't have the connection to do it. So the question is, how does it get there? You know, so the people involved in getting the drugs and the vice and the other types of crimes to flourish in the Black community stand to lose. And they generally were political officials. They generally were police officers. They generally were corporate people who were into these illicit kinds of activities. And so you're basically messing with their money. And I don't know about you, Mr. Turner, but when you start messing with my money, you're going to get a different kind of response. And so that response was, let's get rid of the Black Panther Party. And when throwing them in jail didn't work, when harassing them didn't work, when infiltrating them, you know, you can't, if you can't beat them, join them, when that didn't work, then, of course, the last resort is to execute or to kill the problem. And this is what happened to Fred Hampton on December 4th, 1969, at 4:30 in the morning. The Chicago Gang Intelligence Unit, the Chicago Police Department, the State's Attorney's Office of Illinois, the FBI, and at least one CIA agent kicked in the door of Fred Hampton's apartment, began spraying bullets all over, shooting and wounding eight other people. His fiancée at the time, who was 8.5 months pregnant, was wrestled to the floor, had a boot put on her neck and beaten. And Fred Hampton is shot point blank in the back of the head by an officer who had just previously asked, is that Fred Hampton? Is he dead? And when he shot him, he said, well, he's good and dead now. All of this is in the trial transcripts of people who were there, of other officers who were there, who are quoting these people. And again, that's just one example of how they get things done. And so I would, you know, say that people are serious about accomplishing their goals. When you look at the history of America, the history of white America, the one thing you can say is they're serious about getting what it is they want. And it's something that had been missing, I believe, in Black America. I mean, this whole petition the government, this whole turn the other cheek, this whole I'm going to wait on Jesus to come and solve my problem, had been at one point the way that things were done. But we notice when the Panthers and their supporters became serious, we see substantive change. I mean, I grew up in an era where I got free breakfast. I got free breakfast because the Black Panther Party decided.
You're listening to the voice of Dr. Curtis Austin. He is talking about his book, Up Against the Wall, Violence in the Making and the Unmaking of the Black Panther Party. And he's talking at length. One of the chapters in his book is devoted very specifically to this discussion of COINTELPRO. You've heard him just recounting. And if I have an opportunity, I'll play another short segment of this lengthy interview. You heard him recounting the discussion about the murder and assassination of Fred Hampton in his sleep in Chicago in 1969, what happened there. He talks also in this interview about the prison program, about the influence of George Jackson. He also gives discussion about a number of other issues which are relevant in contemporary era. The phone number here for a copy of the book is available for a $100 pledge. The phone number is 510-848-5732, 510-1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. We're listening to the book up to Curtis Austin talking about his book Up Against the Wall, The Rise and Fall of the Black Panther Party, Violence in the Making and Unmaking of the Black Panther Party. For those of you who are researchers and historians, it is very well documented. There is a very interesting biography essay, bibliographical essay, on which Dr. Austin talks about his work. There's some notations of all the newspapers he used, all the chapters of the Black Panther Party. This is a piece of work that took 10 years. There have been a number of things written about the Black Panther Party. I would dare say that this is one that you need to be able to take a look here. 510-848-5732. You're listening to this interview with Dr. Curtis Austin here on Africa Today, where weekly we bring you news and information about Africa and the African diaspora. It's often asked, what does the African diaspora mean? And that is wherever African people have found themselves in the world, here in the United States, here in South America, here in Central America. If you have an opportunity to listen to Africa Today, we've done interviews recently on Muda Baruka. We had on the air recently. We did an interview on the Marowe Dam Project, which will fund parts of Nubia. We did a piece about William Gumede, who talked about South African politics. We talked about the 50th anniversary of Ghana. We talked with Feroz Manji from Pambazuka. We spoke with Emery Douglas. We spoke with Cornelius Moore about the death of Usman Timbin. We spoke with Reverend Lucius Walker about developments in Cuba. We spoke with a gentleman, Mr. Sawore, about developments in Nigeria. We spoke with Tajuddin about the Pan-Africanist movement. We spoke with Betty McConey talking about developments in Zimbabwe. We spoke with Abdi Samatar talking about developments in the country of Somalia. Africa Today is not simply limited to issues on the African continent, but everywhere that African people find themselves. Today, we're offering as a premium 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732, up against the wall, violence in the making and unmaking of the Black Panther Party. Brilliant piece of work. I mean, something that you should have on your shelves. 510-848-5732, 848-KPFA. Dr. Curtis Austin has spent probably about 10 years plus working on this particular book. And as I was saying, he's talking, there's another segment which I may be able to play this evening where he talks about the 10-point program and platform, the genius of the brilliance of the 10-point program and platform. Of whatever you hear talked about with the Black Panther Party, very rarely do you hear a lot of discussion about the 10-point program and platform. He talks, as we heard the end of it in that last segment, he talks about the way in which the party found itself in Algeria, the way which the party found itself welcome in Congo-Brazzaville, the way the party found itself welcome in Vietnam, welcome in China, welcome in Korea, welcome in Cuba, welcome all over the world. This is a very, very a serious and important text about a very, very serious and important movement. And as he says at the end of the discussion, if you listen, we were talking earlier about the San Francisco Eight, who are currently having hearings in San Francisco. He says that this is about people who are saying, and this is what COINTELPRO 2007 is saying, is that we intend to go back to the 1960s. We need to go back to the 1950s. Everyone who we feel that there's something open on the book, we intend to arrest someone. We intend to prosecute someone by any means necessary. 510-848-5732. And we're fortunate at Pacifica to be able to talk about the Black Panther Party for an hour. We have open phone lines, and we have a match on the line at this point. Alice from Fremont and Telly from Berkeley have put up a match of approximately $350. What that means is that in our remaining time, for every caller who calls in, that it is matched. 510-848-5732. Eldridge Cleaver used to always say, you're part of the problem, you're part of the solution. 510-848-5732. 510-848-5732, 1-800-HEY-KPFA, for a $100 pledge, up against the wall, violence in the making and the unmaking of the Black Panther Party. It's very interesting because many of the people who are interviewed are people from the Bay Area, the 1966 kind of home and root of the Black Panther Party. But Dr. Austin puts it in the context of all the things that were happening around the country and around the world in the 1960s. We have a $350 match on the line. 510-848-5732. 848-KPFA.
510-848-KPFA or 1-800-439-KPFA. The numbers for you to dial. to make your pledges of support for free speech and freedom of information here on the radio airwaves, and to make your support felt, especially for what goes on here Monday nights between the hours of 7 and 8 o'clock, and that is Africa Today with Walter Turner. I mean, there's nowhere else on the dial right now where you can tune in every week and hear something that relates to Black issues in America, and not just in America, but worldwide, starting with the continent of Africa and how it all relates to what happens with us here in this continent of North America. And a very interesting premium that Walter has tonight, a compelling interview. It's really interesting to hear the points of view that are coming up from this interview, and it just puts into mind again the thought that there is no freedom without revolution. And sometimes, as Malcolm says, revolution can be a bloody thing. But the points that were brought up in this interview, and it sounds like a very interesting read also, are something that I think we should all check out, pay attention to, and hear. And again, that's information that you hear here at KPFA, thanks to a show like Africa Today. 510-848-5732. That's 510-848-KPFA, or 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-HEY-KPFA. And as Walter mentioned, we are in a challenge match period right now, which means that when you call, you make your pledge of support, and that support is matched by the generous donor who has made this challenge right now. So give us a call right now. We have a caller online, but your call and your support is needed at this time. 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732.
I can always tell when the interview is of interest. Greg Bridges, who comes on with Transition on Traditions, is somewhat of a personal gauge. Because if he walks in getting ready for his program at 8 o'clock and he makes a comment about the interview which was playing, then I know it must have been of interest. Greg's show, if you listen to Transition on Transition, is just a wonderful mix of music and art and politics. And I just feel blessed that there is a KPFA, there is a Pacifica, and in fact that Africa Today is right in front of Transitions on Traditions. I think it's just a great a block of time that gives me an opportunity to listen. When I'm doing Africa Today, I often don't get a chance to listen to the interview. So sometimes I'm here, I go back online and listen to them. But I did re-listen to the interview by Curtis Austin today. 510-848-5732. And there are segments which I won't have an opportunity to play because of time. But it is well worth the read. And in some senses, my brothers and sisters, it's not simply about the book by Curtis Austin, nor simply about the research that he's done very specifically about the Black Panther Party, as I talked about earlier, and he talked about COINTELPRO in the contemporary period. One would be remiss not to be cognizant of the fact that the type of dirty tricks, the type of COINTELPRO activities we can see in Abu Ghraib, we can see in Guantanamo, we can see the type of concerns that Dr. Austin raised about why was there a Black Panther Party. That's a question that often needs to be asked, rather than what the Black Panther Party did or what the Black Panther Party didn't do. Why was there a Black Panther Party? And you heard him talking about that response to why did people join the Black Panther Party. 510-848-5732. We have a $350 match on the line. 1-800-439-5732. The book by Dr. Curtis Austin, Up Against the Wall, as he talked about, this was a phrase that Bobby Seale and Eldridge Cleaver often used. They'd walk in and say, we're going to go to the White House, and we're going to walk into the White House, and we're going to say, up against the wall, MF, we've come for what's ours. We've come for what's due us. And that's a key question. Why men and women across the country and across the nation join the Black Panther Party? As Curtis Austin said, some historians have painted it as this was the Luffin proletariat, this was the downtrodden. These were people who had no opportunity, no chance of moving forward either career or vocation. But Dr. Austin said that's not the case. People joined the Black Panther Party, black men and black women, and they became a hub for movements such as the Peace and Freedom Party. They became a hub for movements such as the Brown Berets. They became a hub for movements such as the Red Guard. They made a hub for movements such as the SDS. And brothers and sisters like Malcolm X and the others who were involved in the movement, Malcolm X is one of his greatest influences was on young white youth in movements like the SDS. So Curtis Austin is not simply talking history, he's talking contemporary affairs. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. Last week we were talking about the Katrina Tribunal, which, hey, another thing that you haven't heard about in the newspaper.
But you hear about it here on KPFA.
You hear about it here on KPFA, talking about Hurricane Katrina and, surprise, surprise, Hurricane Rita, which seemed to have dropped off the map. 1-800-439-5732 for a $100 pledge, a copy of Up Against the Wall, Violence and the Making and Unmaking of the Black Panther Party. We need a few more calls here to be able to make our match. 510-848-5732.
And one thing that goes that should be noted is that just as the question came up in the interview, or the thought for the book in the first place is, why was there a Black Panther Party? Why was there a need for a Black Panther Party? The question comes up of why is there a need for a show like Africa Today? And if you go up and down your radio dial, you see that there is no representation for people of the African diaspora. There is no news that is coming to us about what's happening on the continent of Africa that affects us here in America. There is no news of that anywhere else except here on Africa Today, which comes your way every Monday night at KPFA. You know, Monday nights when you turn your radio on, you turn your dial to 94.1 FM, or if you're listening online at www.kpfa.org. You know, at Monday nights, 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, you're going to hear the voice of Walter Turner. You're going to hear some compelling interview or some informative news. You're going to hear something that you just don't get anywhere else. You're going to hear some compelling music from the continent of Africa that you don't hear anywhere else. There have been plenty of times that I've come in and Walter would be playing a song to go out with that would just grab my ear. And on many of his trips, he would be kind enough to bring back some of that music for my pleasure, but also it gives me a chance to share that music with the listener here at KPFA. The times that I've had the honor of sitting in on Africa Today and just presenting the music of the continent, a lot of that music has come from the many trips that Walter has taken over to the continent and brought back here for us. So those are different things that that make the show important, that make the show even more important. And your help illuminates that importance. Your help shows that this show is not only important to you, the individual listener, but to you as a group of listeners. And you're showing Pacifica that this show is a show that's very important to KPFA and that should be here. And in this society, it's the dollar that talks. So your financial support is what says that you need Africa Today on KPFA. Your financial support is what says that you want Africa Today on KPFA. So whatever it is you have to contribute, $20, $15, $25 makes you a bona fide voting member here at KPFA. 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. Again, that's 510-848-KPFA or 1-800-HEY-KPFA. And it's really interesting tonight that the premium that you're giving Walter is directly related to the Black Panthers. In a few moments, I'm going to be speaking with Kay Bakanti. Last week, we had some of the members in of the Cornelia Bell Lower Bottoms Gallery in, and the exhibit opening up Friday night was the work of Emery Douglas. Well, that work is expanded, and it's going to be showing also over at Guerrilla Cafe. Kay Bakanti is going to be here tonight, a cat who I consider one of the Panthers of this generation.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be in tonight to talk more about that and what's going on and his role as an artist and an activist and as an entrepreneur and how the Panthers influence and affect us even today, years after their formation, years after COINTELPRO, years after being sabotaged by government. 510-848-5732. That's 510-848-KPFA or 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-HEY-KPFA.
Yeah, and interesting you mentioned Kay Bacanti because his work gives me chills. You know, when I see artists, and there's some artists that you've had here on Transitions on Traditions, and many of them are in the Bay Area, you travel around, you see them, their work just gives you chills because it just has so much skill, it has so much voice, it has so much sound to it. And we definitely want to thank Pat Jameson and Wele, always, usually here in the phone room, donating time and energy, Vukani Mwethu, Andrea Turner, I think, is also this evening, and thank you. Cheryl Kyle, we want to thank coming out of Sacramento. George Mitchell, we want to thank calling out of East Palo Alto. Sarah Harper, we want to thank calling out of Emeryville. Victor and Sharon Barnett, we want to thank calling out of Salinas. We still have a match on the line, 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. I think the other thing, too, is that the San Francisco 8 actually are having bail hearings this week on this Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And these are gentlemen, many of them in their late 60s, who were tortured. Several of them were tortured in the 1970s. And the testimony was thrown out of court because it was obtained by torture. And the same officers that were involved in torturing them came back to reopen this case.
Brought out of retirement
to torture people. So this is exactly what Curtis Austin is talking about in terms of his book. We want to thank Christy coming out of Sausalito. We want to thank Jim and Ann McWilliams coming out of Oakland. We want to thank Robin Carpenter. Why don't you go to the phones and join if you've waited, if you've thought about it? Thank Robin Carpenter calling in from Sonoma. We want to thank Richard Ships calling in from Sebastopol. We're getting people from the 707 area code. We'd like to get some people from the 916 area code. 848-5732. 510-848-5732. I tell you, they use the word page turner for, I think it's usually for mystery novels and for the kind of airport novels that you see as you're getting on a plane.
Or for the gossip.
Oh, for the gossip.
For the gossip magazine.
For the gossip magazine. But Curtis Austin's is a multi-page turn. You will turn the pages and then you will go back through it again. There was a section where he was talking about the growth and transformation. And finally, there's a piece here about what happened to the party in 1969 and 1970, meaning the infiltration of the party, and the party being the FBI, your tax dollar, and the CIA being used to murder young men and women who were members of the Black Panther Party and who supported the 10-point program and platform. People like Fred Bennett, people like Alex Rackley, people who infiltrated the party, the spinoffs from the party. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. I can assure you, I read a book all the time for the interviews, particularly when I'm talking with an author, and I mark the books up. So I actually need to get another copy of Up Against the Wall, Violence in the Making and Unmaking of the Black Panther Party. Curtis J. Austin, you heard him speaking earlier. He said the reason that he got into it was that his brothers, who were so big, he noticed that when they encountered white people in the South in Mississippi, they weren't so big. And one day he saw a photo with someone with a bandolero, and he began to ask questions. And he came out, and his quest began. He met Emory Douglas, he met Billy X, etc. And he began to put this book together. And he talks about in another part that he was at a reunion of the Black Panther Party, and they didn't even want him in the room the first night. Finally, the next evening, they took a vote, and they said, okay, you can sit here. So he said the people were still, because of so much infiltration, because of so much murder, so much mayhem of people who have been scarred by war, people who were standing for, they wanted better land, housing, bread, justice, and peace. The simple thing, 510, and that's what KPFA is about. It's about bringing you that message and keeping that message alive in your community. 510, the Black Panther Party is not, I think we all have come to the realization it's not as it's portrayed in the media. But do we know why? And I think Greg raised the question, why did young men and women all across the United States and many other parts of the world in the 1960s say, they're willing to join a movement which is at its core armed self-defense, and to work day in and day out, to get up to sell newspapers, to walk the street, breakfast for children, sickle cell anemia programs, rides to prison programs, health care screening programs, institutes for education, 510-84. What was that about? What does that say about the experience in America? What does that say about the experience of African people and poor people in America? What does that say about the founding of organizations like the SDS and others? 510-848-5732, KPFA, 1-800-HEY-KPFA. $100 pledge that is up against the wall. We still have a match on the line. Violence and the making and the unmaking of the Black Panther Party. Those of you who are scholars and researchers and professors and academics out there, you don't want to, as they say, you really don't want to sleep on this one. It is quite a piece of work. 510-848-5732.
Thanks to Marty. Thanks to Barbara in Richmond. And thanks to Roberta in Alameda for your support of listener-supported radio and Africa Today on KPFA. 510-848-5732. That's 510-848-KPFA or 1-800-439-5732. Keep those calls coming.
Super!
You are in tune with listener-supported radio, KPFA or KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, and online at www.kpfa.org. We are in the midst of our summer membership drive. 510-848-5732. That's 510-848-5732. Or 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-439-5732.
Nia, Imani, Kujajakalia. Here's to the best words in the right place at the perfect time, to the human mind blown up and refined, to long conversations and the philosophical ramifications of a beautiful day, to the 12 steppers at the 13th step, may they never forget the first step, to the increase, to the decrease, to the do, to the do, to the did, to the did, to the do, to the did, to the done done, to the lonely, to the brokenhearted, to the new blue haiku. Here's to all or nothing at all. Here's to the sick and the shut in. Here's to the was you been, to the is you in, to us deep and deep, to us down and down, to the lost and the blind and the almost found. To the crazy, the lazy, the bored, the ignored, the beginners, the sinners, the losers, the winners, to the smooth and the cool, and even to the fools. Here's to your ex-best friend, to the rule benders and the repeat offenders, to the lovers and the troublers, the engaging, the enraging, to the healers and the feelers and the fixers and the tricksters, to a star falling through a dream, to a dream when you know what it means, to the bottom, to the root, to the base, boom, to the drum. Here's to the was you been, to the is you in, to us deep and deep, to us down and down, to the lost and the blind and the almost found. Here's to somebody within the sound of your voice this morning. Here's to somebody who can't be within the sound of your voice tonight. To a low cholesterol pig sandwich smothered in swine without the pork. To a light buzz in your head and a soundtrack in your mind going on and on and on and on and on like a good time. Here's to promises that break by themselves. Here's to the breaks with great promise. To people who don't wait in the car when you tell them to wait in the car. Here's to what you forgot and who you forgot. Here's to the unforgettable. Here's to the was you been, to the is you in, to us deep and deep, to us down and down, to the lost and the blind and the almost found. Here's to the hip-hoppers, the don't stoppers, heads nodding in the digital glow of their beloved studios. To the incredible, indelible impressions made by the gazes you gaze in the faces of strangers. To yourself you ask, could this be God straight up? Or is it a mask? Here's to the tribe of the hyper-cyber, tripping at the virtual most outpost, at the edge, on the tip, believing that what they hear is the mothership drawing near. Here's to the was you been, to the is you in, to us deep and deep, to us down and down, to the lost and the blind and the almost found.
When we first organized the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, you say, Bobby, he says, we're going to draw up a basic platform, just basic, that black people can read. He says, we don't want to go real elaborate with all these essays and dissertations and all this stuff, because the brother going to look at that and he can say, man, I ain't got time for that. I got to go see what I can do for myself. He says, just a basic platform that the mothers who struggle hard to raise us, that the fathers who worked hard, that the young brothers in school who come out of school semi-illiterate. You say we want freedom, we want power to determine the destiny of our black community. Full employment for our people. Number three, we want housing fit, decent housing fit for shelter of human beings. Number four, we want all black men to be exempt from military service. Number five, we want decent education for our black people in our community that teaches us the true nature of this decadent racist society, and to teach black people and our young black brothers and sisters their place in the society, because if they don't know their place in society and in the world, they can't relate to anything else. Number six, we want an end to the robbery by the white racist businessmen of black people and black people in their community. Number seven, we want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. black men held in county, state, federal jails and prisons to be released because they have not had a fair trial because they've been tried by all white juries, and that's just like being tried in Germany being a Jew. Number eight, we want black people, number nine, when brought to trial, to be tried by members of their peers. And a peer being one who comes from the same economic, social, religious, historical, and racial background. If the United States government and the courts and the local courts did this, they would have to choose black people from the black community to sit up on the jury. They'd have to choose some of them mothers who've been working 20 years in Miss Ann's kitchen scrubbing floors like my mother done. They have to choose some of them hard-working fathers. They have to choose some of those brothers who stand on the block out there wondering where they're going to get a gig. They're going to have to choose these black people. And number 10, he would say, let's just summarize it. We want housing, we want clothing, we want education, we want justice, and we want peace.
Greetings and welcome to Transitions on Traditions, a soul sonic rhapsody of words, sound, and power. I'm Greg Bridges, your host for the next couple of hours, bringing you the music, the words, and all that goes along with it, and asking for your help during our summer membership drive. 510-848-5732, that's 510-848-KPFA, or 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-HEY-KPFA. Transitions on Traditions comes your way each and every Monday night at 8 o'clock, and part of the purpose of this show, in addition to bringing you some great music, is to shine a spotlight on some of our community activists, entrepreneurs, artists, and such. And it gives me pleasure tonight to welcome to the studio a man who wears all of those hats, and he wears them well. Activist, artist, entrepreneur, family man, and a friend of KPFA, Kay Bacanti. How you doing? Of me playing the Bobby Seale reading off the 10-point platform of the Black Panther Party was to evoke the spirit of the Panthers, and that's exactly what you're doing over at Guerrilla Cafe coming up with the artwork of Emory Douglas. So tell us a bit about that, man.
Well, thank you for setting the stage. Yeah, that was really nice hearing Bobby set it off, and it's nice seeing Bobby just floating around Oakland, you know, just see him at the gas station, the supermarket, and you know, I mean,
good,
it's just
good to see his brother back,
you know,
home.
Yeah, right? It's nice to see him, and just to have that history and good people like that just around us. Another one of those people is Emory Douglas. Emory Douglas, the former Minister of Culture for the Black Panther Party, and also the artist responsible for that very iconic artwork that graced the pages of the Black Panther newspaper and all of those Black Panther posters that were just omnipresent in every barbershop, hair store, you know what I mean, the grocery stores. I mean, they were just all over the community. This artwork is really, you know what I mean, that was kind of what the revolution looked like.
Right.
And so I met up with Emory Douglas and invited him to do an exhibition at the Guerrilla Cafe. We've been up and running for about, you know, just over a year now. Set it off on May Day weekend of last year, 06. So what we're going to do is actually publish and remaster a series of his some of his very poignant and classic images from 1969 to 1971. And it's going to be a variety of images. We're working on 10 different images. We're going to do a series of hand-pulled silk screens. So this is something that I really haven't seen done with his work. A lot of his work was made very graphic and was made for the newspaper. So they lend themselves very well to the medium of silk screen, which is a medium that I really enjoy working with as well. doing t-shirt printing and posters and whatnot, taking classes at Laney College with David Bradford, and a great silkscreen artist. So anyhow, we're just publishing a really beautiful high-end collection of his works on some really archival paper, and just trying to do it righteous, you know? I mean, right. Really just put a really nice touch on it. So I've been working with him around, you know, just getting the colors right and really just getting everything right. And there'll be a limited edition. So the edition is limited to 66 in honor of the founding of 1966, of the founding of the Black Panther Party. Just an interesting coincidence. I happened to be born in 1966. So, but yeah, man, so that's some of the things we have planned. We're going to set it off next Sunday, August 12th. I thought August, being Black August, August has a long history of Black resistance,
right,
in America, from, you know, Garvey's birthday to, you know, to Turner, Nat Turner's rebellion, to, of course, Jonathan Jackson's peace in Marin. I mean, it just goes on and on. So I thought that would be appropriate to set it off right here, right now.
You mentioned something else. Really special that you're doing at the cafe in connection with the artwork. Now, you mentioned the silkscreen, but the walls and the work that's going on right now.
I mean, you know, we never just put a picture on the wall and call it an exhibition. You know, right. We always really tried to look for the layers, and like I learned from one of my great mentors, Laura Nabon, who really brought the wall to life as part of the exhibition. So what we're doing is actually painting. We have about a 25-foot wall, and we're doing a mural, very sort of soft monotones and a very low contrast mural of some of Emory's graphics on the wall, from ceiling to floor to ceiling, from wall to wall, and that's just the background.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll be hanging his pieces on those. I also am going to be working with some stencils. So we'll do, you know, some stencil prints, right? So there'll be 3-4 color series of stencil prints, still of Emory's graphics. So I'm not really reinterpreting them. I'm really trying to take them, you know, and just remaster them like you would an old jazz album or something, right. You know, and, you know, in the digital age. So I'm just trying to put a little touch like that on it.
510-848-5732. That's 510-848-5732. The number for you to dial to make your pledge of support to KPFA, Transitions on Traditions, and Free Speech Freedom Radio. 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-439-5732, a toll-free number. My guest tonight is Kaba Conti, and as I mentioned, Kaba is activist, artist, entrepreneur, family man, and a family of the Bay Area. As an artist, Kaba, and having this opportunity to witness Emory in a working environment, what does it mean for you as an artist? How has Emory's work influenced you overall?
Oh, I mean, you know, I mean, just his directness. I mean, well, first of all, what I can say about Emory Douglas is he's just such a beautiful and humble man that, you know, and very healthy.
Right.
And, I mean, he's strong. He's in really good shape. I mean, you know, I mean, that movement took its toll on a lot of our elders. I mean, really took its toll on their psyche, their spirit, and their body. But Emory's, you know, is really doing well. He's taking care of his mama in San Francisco. So it has really been a pleasure to get to know him better, to work with him, and just see his eye, you know, for details and for colors. And it's very inspiring. And also to hear him talk about the politics around the work. I mean, we talked about, you know, so far about the medium, the editions, and the, you know, the quality of the medium. But the message, I mean, when you look back at this work, I mean, you know, I mean, so then it must have been, I mean, it was obviously radical then in the late 60s and early 70s.
Right.
But for some reason, Greg, when I'm looking at these, you know, this artwork, it seems even more radical today. I mean, you just don't, there isn't really that kind of militant political voice in America right now. I mean, especially after 9-1-1.
Right.
Especially. I just haven't really heard that. So that work seems more radical than ever. You know, I mean, just about self-defense and do what it takes to defend ourselves. I mean, because it's not like that much has changed in terms of the black community's relationship with the police. I mean, this is, you know, still happening. Modern day Oakland,
modern day Detroit, modern day LA, San Jose. I mean, you're hearing about it all over the country and in different parts of the world. And you're right, it's a situation that hasn't changed much. It may have taken on a different face, it may have been called something else. And to me, that's one of the important things about Emory's work even today. His work from 30 years ago, 35 years ago, still stands up today and still carries a lot of that same meaning that it carried back in the late 60s and early 70s when it graced the Black Panther newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, this is definitely something to see. Again, when is the exhibit open and how long will it be at Guerrilla Cafe?
That's going to be this coming Sunday, August 12th. The reception is 3 to 6. He'll also be doing a book signing. He's just recently, this year, just the past few months, published a absolutely beautiful book. Which is the book I got and inspired me to contact him about publishing this collection of prints. The book is called Black Panther, The Revolutionary Art of Emory Douglas. And another, you know, just to get back a little bit about the content and the politics and even progression of consciousness in his work, you'll see that it's laid out in the books where it's, you know, opens up with the real kind of militant, heavy, you know, guns and those images. A lot of, you know, the classic kill the pig images. And then it goes on to show the breakfast program and some of the more community on the block activism that happens. And his work continues to evolve and reflect where he's at as an artist. You know, so he's still creating, still painting. He's not stuck in that era. So it's, you know, that was just another pleasure of seeing the book. But yeah, he'll be signing these books, you know, and they're beautiful. Come through, get a book, Emory Douglas, this Sunday, 3-6. It's all good.
Now, some of our listeners had the honor of getting that book during our last pledge drive. That was one of the things that Walter Turner offered as a thank you gift. Emory was even here to talk about it.
Oh, there you go.
But for those of you who haven't, or those of you who have and want to see even more works of Emory Douglas, this is a great place and a great time to do it. The Guerrilla Cafe, the location?
1620 Shattuck Avenue. At Cedar, directly across the street from Elephant Pharmacy.
Right.
Yeah, North Berkeley, about five blocks north of University.
Great waffles, too.
All right.
One of the things I did mention, Cabe, at the beginning is, I mean, people do know you as an artist, and now they're knowing you as an entrepreneur, but your activism is something that that I've seen go into your work and also into your position as an entrepreneur, your activism, your care for people, but also your care for the earth. I mean, what you're doing over at the restaurant right now, as far as it being green in a sense, you know, that's something to be commended. But for folks who don't know, Cabe Conte is also a friend of KPFA. He's one who has put his money where his mouth is as far as supporting free speech radio here at KPFA. He's called in, made his pledges, donation during the pledge drives. Guerrilla Cafe has offered food and support of the folks who come in to the phone rooms and answer the phones. So Cabe is active on all fronts, and I would like for you to join him in showing how important KPFA is to you as your community voice, as your community station, by giving us a call right now at 510-848-5732. That's 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-HEY-KPFA. Without your support, it wouldn't be possible for me to invite Cabe or many of the other artists and activists of our community in to inform you on what's going on around the community. And for a look at some of the artwork of Emory Douglas that Cabe has been mentioning, you can go to kpfa.org/art. And there are five different pieces up there that you can check out, which you will have a chance to view over at the exhibit this coming Sunday. Cabe, man, I want to thank you for coming in.
Yes, sir.
thank you for the work you do community-wise and especially for your inspirational art, man.
Oh, yeah, you're so welcome. And I want to thank you for always giving me the opportunity to get on the air and share this information with the rest of the KPFA tribe out there. One other thing I would like to mention, you know, in terms of just the activism and being conscious of political prisoners now and then, is the SF8. You know, I mean, I know you guys are definitely passing on the info here. So we're tying that in. We decided that we would, you know, put a portion of the proceeds of the money that we're, you know, making from the prints in the artwork towards the legal defense fund of the SF8, the San Francisco 8. And there's a website you can find out more about that. That's www.freethesf8.org. We'll have more information this coming Sunday at the reception, 1620 Shattuck Avenue. Cross street is Cedar. That's this Sunday, 3 to 6.
And speaking with Emery has done a special poster in honor of the SF8. So this would be a great way to get out and show your support. Stop by the Gorilla Cafe. Give us a call here at KPFA, 510-848-5732. Again, that's 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-HEY-KPFA. Before you get out, Cave, I have to ask you, as I mentioned, you support KPFA, not just verbally. You put your dollar out there. But what is it about KPFA that you feel has earned your support?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, you know, I mean, I just love the programming. I mean, you just really don't hear it anywhere else, you know. I really love your program. I listen to Hard Knock, you know, Amy in the morning. You know, I mean, that's just like I need to touch base and see what's really going on in the world. You know, I mean, I could listen to other radio, but, yeah, I mean, I'm always so busy filtering and trying to interpret what's really, you know. But, you know, so, I mean, it's just important. I mean, it's really what's happening on the block. You know, I mean, you hear JR's block report. I mean, you really have, you're hearing it. And, I mean, and it's more connected. You know, so I'm just connected. I know a lot of the folks who are on here. I know what y'all talking about. And it's family. And that's how we do. We support family, period.
That's how we do. Become a part of the family. 510-848-5732, 510-848-KPFA, or 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-HEY-KPFA. Again, my guest tonight has been Kaba Conti. Kaba, well-known, world-renowned artist, entrepreneur, activist. And this Sunday, you can stop by the Gorilla Cafe at 1620 Shattuck Avenue in Berkeley and check out the latest work of Emery Douglas and check out the latest inspiration of Kaba Conti. Again, thanks for your time, man.
Yeah, thank you, Greg.
Transitions on Traditions moves on, but we can't move further without your help. 510-848-5732. That's 510-848-KPFA or 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-HEY-KPFA. Wonderful thank you gifts being offered to you as your pledges of support. One of them called The Soul of Nina Simone, which is a dual disc. One side is a CD, the other side a DVD, which includes rare concert footage of Nina Simone. That being offered to you as a thank you with your pledge of support to KPFA. Give us a call right now, 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732.